Cairo, Seattle.
It's time to get schooled with a professor, John Clayton.
Welcome to Schooled with the Professor, and we are pleased to be joined by Andrew Brandt, who, you know, worked the cap, worked the contracts, all these different things. I mean, his expertise is, you know, studying what's going on in the finances, but also the business part of it. And we have so much to talk about because so much came out of the championship games. And so we'll get into the salary cap in a little bit. But what we want to do here on Schooled is kind of get into, because your longtime service in the league and your knowledge, we have the big controversy that happened in the New Orleans game, the non-call. And of course, everybody is rushing to judgment right now. And you know that the league is a reactionary league, reacting to the negativity that might be out there and try to satisfy it. But ultimately, I'm like you, don't expect a major change in some of the rules, although something's got to change out of this, you would think.
Yeah, John, and always good to be with you. I mean, I think the important thing that people have to know is the competition committee, which has the power to change things, it's not like they're meeting before the Super Bowl. So their scheduled meeting is always a week before the owners' meetings, which means mid to late March. And by mid to late March, you, I, and everyone listening is not going to be as invested in what just happened as we are now. It's just human nature. So I've seen this movie before many times. There's outrage, there's talk, the dominating conversation throughout the time in January, and then they get together in March and they're like, well, what was that controversy again? Now, I know this is bigger and it changed the fortunes for the Super Bowl, but even still, when they start to look at it in a sterile environment, obviously in a sun-soaked location, Florida or Arizona, and they decide, yeah, maybe it's not as big a deal as we thought it was in January. So the majority of times, nothing really changes. And people say, well, Sean Payton's on that committee. Well, Sean Payton can't be helped right now and can't be helped by anything in March. So is Sean Payton going to really want to change things? Or say, you know, if that happens, let it happen to someone else, because it already happened to me. So I just don't know, you know, if this outrage is going to last until March.
Yeah, I still remember, I think Mike Tomlin, Steeler coach, when he was, and he's still on the committee, and I remember adamantly talking to him and him being against the idea of having kickoffs or extra points at the 15-yard line, and he thought he had enough support that that was not going to happen, and sure enough, Roger Goodell wanted it, and the next thing you know, here's the kickers at the 15-yard line trying to do the extra points because they wanted more excitement as opposed to just the pattern 99% accuracy of the kickers. So, you know, you can go in like Sean Payton. You can have a mission, and rightfully so. I'm sure that he's also pushing the Bill Belichick idea of having more things reviewed and challenged. But in the end, I mean, this is a kind of a conservative league that doesn't necessarily like to do that.
Yeah, and I know what's going to happen in that room. Somebody on that committee is going to say, now, wait a minute. Do we want the game to stop, even if it's a limited number of challenges like everything else? And we're going to look at video of two guys jostling down the field and decide maybe it's PI, maybe it's not, maybe it's on the offensive guy, maybe it's on the defensive guy. I mean, the problem is there's human error to this game, and we watch these things in slow-mo replay. I'm not talking about the obvious call the other day, but slow-mo replay, we can't really say if that's off, if it's jostling or if it's PI or whatever. And I just think there's going to be people in the room saying, we don't want this. Yeah, we don't want this. The way I think it's got to change, John, and I wrote about this on Sports Illustrated, is technologically. I just think we're going to have human error. So I turned over after the game, I'm a tennis fan. I watched the Australian Open. You know, tennis, a challenge goes to the board, and within seconds, you have microscopic evidence that the ball's in or out. And I know football's more complicated, but it just seems to me in a $15 billion annual revenue business, we could have more technology to answer these questions rather than replay.
So how would that work? Because obviously they have the tablets that they can look at for replay.
Yeah.
But what type of thing can be done in a live game where there's no stoppage?
I'm just thinking out loud about, you know, this interference where, say there was a chip in the ball, say there was a chip in the shoulder pads or helmets of these players, where you could actually see through data or through a ping if the ball arrived before contact or the contact arrived before the ball. You know, it just seems to me there's a lot of ways we could use all this technology to overcome human error. Think about how we even place the ball in football. You have a referee from 20 yards away decides that's where the ball should be. And then for first downs, we have two guys with a chain. You know, it's like, really? That's the way we do this? You start thinking in that sense. So I just think there are ways, you know, like you said, you got tablets, you got deals with them. Amazon. I was involved with Amazon this Thursday Night Football and Twitter, but we don't seem to be using those towards innovation.
Well, the one thing that is there, and I didn't think it would get executed because, you know, I think it's a real simple thing, and I know there's suggestions to fix this up. You know, Al Riveron's back there in New York. He's able to communicate with the ref, and it's a simple thing where Al or one of the people that are watching the game just go to, you know, Bill Vinovich and say, hey, Bill, you better throw the flag. You missed it. I mean, they did a lot more of that in 2017, probably a little bit too much. But isn't that a simple thing to be able to do? It's like, Bill, you're missing the call. Fix it.
Yeah. I mean, it seems to me that was so obvious. I don't know, you know, the rules maybe as well as I should have, if that could actually have been done, and it would have had to be done before the next play, of course, you know, or, you know, people talk about Roger Goodell jumping in. Well, that's a moot point now. But could Roger Goodell have jumped in at the end of that game and say, no, guys, stay on the field. We're redoing it from the point of that play.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you talk about extreme actions, and now there are lawsuits. And, you know, come on, those got no chance. But you wonder about that. That's not as extreme what you're talking about, where Al Riveron say, no, let's overrule that. You know, like back to tennis, the chair umpire overrules the line judge all the time. Why not?
Mm-hmm. I mean, that's where, and I know from you know, talking to Dean Blandino through the years, because he was the one who really set up the New York operation. So there was going to be, you know, more reviews back in New York that could get the word to the officials and get the right calls. And he was the one who advanced that. And, you know, it's the technology's there. I mean, it's like you look on your TV, I look on my TV. We all see it at the game and all that stuff. And it's just a matter of the communication just being better, because I think, you know, that was a fixable play and New York could have fixed it.
Yeah, they could have. And, you know, you've been talking about this for 3 days. I mean, I know people say, well, what about the face mask on Goff? And, you know, the fact is that play's called and the Saints are in the Super Bowl. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's pretty simple, right? It's kneel downs. It's kicking an easy field goal. So if you think anything would spur change, that's it. But like I said, the emotion of the moment's going to be gone when they meet about it.
Because of your history with the league, explain the rationale of the owners and the NFL as far as, you know, they don't like to take away too much of the judgment calls, because what they like is, you know, a game where the officials are making the judgments, because again, sometimes, I mean, you can disagree with the judgment, and sometimes in this case it was flat out wrong, but the league is very much still into the idea of allowing the officials to have the judgment call for the continuity of the game.
Yeah, and I think that's a part of this league. We, you know, the league is built on competitive balance, and the feeling is that it all weighs out, right? And that's why I made the comment about Sean Payton maybe not jumping on this in the competition committee. The feeling is that it always evens out, and this team gets screwed one day, and this team is helped the next day. And it's really the mantra of the NFL is all for one, one for all, and you know, it's why Robert Kraft didn't sue after Deflategate. It's an understanding that we're in this together. And, you know, as simple as it sounds, that's kind of what everyone buys into in these owners' meetings, that, yeah, this, you know, I'll scratch your back, you scratch mine, this helped you. The NFL is a very political being, and everyone's kind of understands we're going to get screwed along the way, but we're going to be helped along the way. And it's kind of that simple.
Mm-hmm. No, I agree with that. Now, the other aspect of this, and again, one of my concerns about the change is I'm fearful of change making things worse. And we've seen that so many times with the catch rule and all that stuff. And that's what I worry about, because, you know, you've seen the helmet rule that didn't turn out to be as bad, but the roughing the passer. I mean, a lot of these things, you know, you make a change and sometimes it can make it worse because they add language in there that makes things complicated.
Yeah, I know. The complicating factors are, you know, and every time you mention these rules, what happens? It's like the first times, the early preseason, you know, the Clay Matthews plays, and then they're gone, right?
Yeah.
Then there's 20 guys that land on quarterbacks like Clay Matthews did, or worse, and nothing's called. So it almost feels like a lot of this stuff is feeling out periods. And listen, in that Saints-Rams game, clearly we had an officiating crew that was, quote-unquote, letting them play. Now, there's letting them play, and then there's egregious acts that are ignored, like the other day. So it's finding that balance, which is so hard.
Oh, yeah. No question. Now, where do you stand on the fairness of overtime? Because, I'm against the idea of changing the overtime rules. I mean, if the Patriots get the coin toss, win the coin toss, and drive down for the touchdown, great. Ball game over, because it's even in a sudden death game, which could go two overtimes. What I didn't like was when they had the fairness in the regular season and they changed the rule. And so you get a field goal and the other team drives for a field goal. Now all of a sudden you may have more chances of a tie. And then they cut it down from 15 minute overtime. Where do you stand on the idea in a championship type game or a playoff type game as far as changing the overtime for fairness?
I guess I'm okay with what it is now. You know, and I really wanted to hear Andy Reid comment on it, because obviously they didn't get a chance to possess the ball. I think those of us following these two teams probably thought whoever got the coin toss was going to go down and score the touchdown, and that's what happened. I feel pretty confident the Chiefs would have done the same. But Andy Reid doesn't have a problem with it. He gets it. You know, that's the breaks of the game. Coin toss takes on added importance, obviously. Listen, it was changed with the New Orleans Saints in 2009, where after that game, where they just won with a field goal and a couple of pass interference plays, a field goal, and it's over. So they have increased it to the requirement of a touchdown. I don't think this is going to change. I really don't. And I think Andy Reid, understanding it, is going to add to the feeling that it stays the same. It'd be great if Pat Mahomes got a chance to possess that ball. I agree as a fan, but that's not a rule I don't think that needs changing.
Mm-hmm. Now, of course, I mean, one thing that has been added to the debate is the fact that this was being the greatest offensive year in NFL history, and things are now so sided to offense, you know, with the defenseless receiver rule change that, you know, gives protection to the receiver so smaller guys can go in the middle of the field. And so the thought is added to the debate is like, okay, well, what thing are you going to do for defense? Because if the criticism is you stop them and the Chiefs didn't stop them, that, you know, everything favors the offense. But of course, that's what the league likes. They love the offense.
Yeah, it does. I mean, listen, we had that end of the season stuff, John, where Ravens and Bears are strong, you know, are shutting down teams like the Saints and the Rams. And everyone's like, whoa, back to defense. But no, we're back to offense. And the Ravens and Bears and those games were kind of aberrations more than the norm this year. And, yeah, I mean, it sells. All the metrics are going north for the NFL. I always cover the NFL business, which is always seems to be doing well. And that's what people want. I get it. And, you know, we talk about the excitement of the game. The excitement of the game is really not defensive struggles. And I think the more people come to grips with the fact that it is a business, which it's just, the NFL is a slice and a big slice of the overall entertainment industry. And you got to come to grips with that and understand why offense is important.
Getting back into the business of the game, this was the first year now that the NFL has, I guess you could say, maybe with the except of Oakland going, the Raiders going to Vegas, you know, they've embraced gambling. Now they're getting deals with casinos and all that stuff and betting and all that. I mean, something I thought that would never happen in this league. Talk first about, you know, how that all changed. And then also, business-wise, what's this going to do with some of the new revenue coming from betting?
Yeah, it's a great story that I've been covering for a lot of years, and the most of the years I was covering it, the NFL was dead set against it, and even 4 years ago, shutting down a fantasy football convention with Tony Romo and others, and then, of course, all the marks against gambling. But I think what a couple things changed. Number one, there was an embrace of daily fantasy. 2015, when DraftKings and FanDuel came aboard, all these teams had sponsorship deals. The NFL didn't take an equity stake like other leagues, but Robert Kraft and Jerry Jones are early investors in DraftKings. The NFL said no problem because it's a mashup of players, not team outcomes. And all of a sudden, that's the gateway to me for more formal gambling. The other thing, of course, is like you mentioned, they placed the team in the mecca of gambling for this country in Vegas. And that greased the skids to this greater acceptance. On the legal front, they never thought they would lose in court. And they didn't lose in court for 6 years. But then they lost. And they would rather have federal legislation about gambling, but they're a dollar late and a day short because the Supreme Court beat them to it. And now we have state by state. But the fact is, like marijuana, it's now societal tolerance for gambling, and it's opened up a way bigger than any NFL thought. So how do they monetize? That's the question. We've seen a deal with Caesars, but Caesars is just the official casino. They haven't made a deal about data, really. They haven't made a deal about sports betting sponsor or anything like that, but we're going to see a lot of revenue streams come out of this. And the players are going to want their share. That's going to be a key issue in collective bargaining. This is a new revenue stream. And beyond the actual revenue stream, we know from data, people watch more football with gambling, whether it's fantasy or real gambling. And this is a major thing for networks, for the business of the sport. It is something where everyone's looking for new revenue streams. Here's the big one. And back to our original conversation, how are they going to deal with integrity issues about what happened the other day with now gambling at the forefront? Because that's where the NFL is going to have to answer more than they have already. What the heck went on? Why is my gambling money being taken away by a referee non-call? That's a big issue going forward.
How much money can be generated for the league through gambling?
You know, that's where it's hard to quantify because, yes, they'll do a deal. They did a deal with Caesars, not a ton of money. I don't even know what it was. But they'll do deals with sponsors, and maybe someone will be the official sports betting sponsor of the NFL for tens of millions of dollars. That's just that, though. The ancillary is what I talked about with media, because media is going to go up in terms of viewership, partly because of the product, but partly because of gambling. I mean, who's watching Tennessee Jacksonville in another market without a bet? So that's going to mean a lot for TV deals or sponsor deals. Everything's going to flow off increased interest, and increased interest is from gambling.
Now it's going to be interesting. And again, you can see with the offense being the way it is, big spike in TV's ratings, and now you got gambling. It's going to get better. It's like I think as much as everybody was really down on the NFL in 2017 with the ratings problem, everything's back up to good business.
Yeah, you know, I don't know. I mean, if it's traced to the kneeling issue and President Trump's comments, but whatever it was, it was short term, and all the metrics are back. All the networks are seeing positive growth, and revenues are up, and asset values. You know, we had the Panthers for 2.2. If the Seahawks sell, as you know, that's going to be much bigger than that. you know, we're seeing franchises that are going to be valued towards $3 billion soon.
It's always interesting. Hey, Andrew, always great catching up with you, and I'm looking forward to seeing you in the Super Bowl.
We'll see you down there. Enjoyed it, John. Thanks.
And that does it for this week's podcast. In between episodes, you can follow me on Twitter at ClaytonESPN. If you enjoy these weekly one-on-one conversations, consider leaving a review on iTunes or wherever you're listening to the show. Thanks for listening. See you next time on Schooled with a Professor.